everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. It is Midweek Edition, Wednesday, the 26th of August, 2020. We're bringing Southern Arizonans together right here on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Of course, we have our worldwide live listening on my website, which has a very extensive archive of pretty much every program we have done since we launched the radio project back in January of 2011. That's at buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Richard Carmona joins us now in the Buckmaster Show, Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Dr. Carmona, former Surgeon General, now Chief of Health Innovation at the Resort Spa Canyon Ranch in Tucson. Dr. Carmona was a Vice Admiral in the Public Health Service Commissioned Corps, served as the 17th Surgeon General of the United States. After 4 years as Surgeon General, he returned to Tucson, where he is vice chair of Canyon Ranch Resort and Spa. He's president of the nonprofit Canyon Ranch Institute, a professor in the Zuckerman College of Public Health at the University of Arizona. He began his medical career as a United States Army Special Forces medic back in 1967. He is a combat-decorated Vietnam veteran. He's had a very successful law enforcement career, and he is still connected with the Pima County Sheriff's Department. That goes, that connection goes back, Dr. Carmona, to 1986?
About 35 years.
35 years. Now, his latest challenge, and this has been a big one, he's leading this University of Arizona Campus Reentry Task Force. And of all the things, first of all, great to see you again, Dr. Carmona.
Likewise, Bill. Always good to be with you.
Of all the challenges that you have faced in your life, this is a pretty big one, isn't it?
It is tough. You know, the public wants their university open, but opening a university in a COVID world is a challenge. But we're working through it. We have great leadership with Dr. Robbins, the president of the university, and the incident command system we set up. And we're working through it. As you know, we opened this week, and so far things are going pretty well. The backdrop, of course, as we spoke about, is that cases seem to be leveling off here in Tucson, but we're not complacent. We're cautiously optimistic. Hopefully we can keep the numbers down.
Before we talk some more about the reentry, I want to talk a little bit about our air quality. Dr. Carmona, I've been in town 32 years, 32 summers. This is, first of all, the hottest. It's the driest. It's the summer that all of us have feared, the summer that really the summer rains never came.
Yes.
And add to that, the Catalina is burning pretty much from one end to the other in June, creating really smoke problems. And now this, we have a high pollution advisory being issued today. Those of us, myself included, who have allergies to wood smoke, I know a lot of people I have heard who are healthy people, Dr. Carmona, are complaining of breathing issues.
Well, Bill, you're absolutely correct. And as I told you when I came in this morning, I'm feeling it myself, that my throat's irritated. I've got a lot of, runny nose, so to speak. And, just looking at the air outside, it's like we're looking through a fog because of all the smoke that's surrounding the valley. And I think that's particularly problematic for those people who have asthma, pulmonary disease, emphysema, things like that, that they're going to have a very tough time. We expect hospitalizations and seeking medical care will go up during these times.
Do you have any quick advice for people that are having these problems right now?
Stay indoors. Stay indoors.
If at all possible, don't go outside.
Right.
Keep the air going and just not deal with it.
Exactly. As much as you can, stay away from it, especially those populations that are vulnerable.
So let's talk now about the University of Arizona reentry. What phase are we in? Is that first phase? I've heard that it's on pause. What's the very latest?
So if you go on the website, you can actually look at all of this. It's quite complex, but with the help of our epidemiologists, our other professors, and so many disciplines in the university, we've aggregated information to create best practices. And let me preface my remarks by saying that COVID-19 is new to this world as of last December or January. So we don't have a playbook because nobody's had to deal with this before. So on a daily basis, President Robbins and I are speaking to other university presidents, chancellors, you know, each sharing information for best practices. So we feel that the strategy we put in place is reflective of those best practices, but it changes frequently because as we learn more about the virus and how it transmits and causes problems, we act accordingly. So we set up a system whereby on the 24th, the school opened. Students primarily will be starting with digital education for a couple of weeks, except those that need to be in a physical location. For instance,
and they will be wearing masks.
Absolutely.
Everybody
masks,
on campus,
social distancing, okay. All of that. But if you're, you know, if you're a chemistry student and you have to be in a laboratory, if you're a researcher in a laboratory, how about, you know, theater arts where you have to be in a on a stage? So we've tried to make exceptions safely for those students who have to physically be someplace. But otherwise, we're bringing in the students over several weeks, but we're looking at metrics. We're not guessing. We're looking to see, is the disease staying low in the community? Is the spread low in the campus? We have a dormitory set up for quarantine if we need it. We have student affairs, student health, campus health ready to help us. So there's a lot of things that have come together to make the physical plan of the university safe. But the most important thing is that when the students come back on campus, they have to understand that for the privilege of being here, they must change their behaviors. They must wear a mask, stay socially distanced, no bro hugs, no high fives, no hanging out with your friends, sharing drinks, because that's how the infection spreads. And if we see a spread, the president has said, we will have very low threshold and we will stop. We'll go all digital until we can eradicate this infection.
How do you keep the kids, though, from the partying, the sororities and the fraternities, the whole thing?
It is our biggest challenge and fear, changing social behaviors, because part of the college education is to come back and be with your friends and
right.
go to games
hang out.
Yeah. And so what we're saying is that we are creating a new world order. And by social distancing, wearing a mask, all of the public health practices will be different. And, you know, I find myself, Bill, when I came into your studio.
Yeah, I was there to greet you at the door.
I instinctively wanted to reach out and shake your hand, and I stopped.
I know you did.
And so but those are the innate behaviors.
These are social norms
that
we have had. We reach out to touch people.
Yes. And we're humans. We want to touch people.
Yes.
We want to interact.
Yeah.
So helping the students understand how important it is to not do those old behaviors, but accept these behaviors for now, because the faster we can do these and adhere to these practices, we can keep that curve flat and hopefully revert back to something closer to normal. But the new normal will be different than the old normal.
790-2040, 790-2040 for questions and comments for Dr. Carmona. So how many students now have been tested and what have been the results so far?
We have, on testing started a couple of weeks ago, but overall we've done a few thousand tests. I don't have the exact number today. We've only had a handful of positives. We have several students that are in the quarantine dormitory now, and a couple of others who went home because they live here, so they quarantined at home. So overall, the strategy has worked. We've been able to identify students early, because what we do is, Bill, before they can go to their dorm, they have to be tested. If they test okay, then they go to their dorm. If they test positive, then they go to the quarantine dorm. They can still take their classes there, but they're in a building where they can't spread the infection anymore. Mm-hmm. Then after that quarantine period, they go back to their regular dorm and they go to class as usual.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. The ones that have tested positive have not been really very sick that would need hospitalization at this point.
That's correct.
That's a very important point.
It is. For the most part, well, let me put it this way, even more than that, 25 to 30%, and CDC thinks maybe up to 40% of people may be asymptomatic and yet carry the disease and spread it. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing very low numbers of testing positive here, and we're seeing even less numbers of people who are symptomatic. So that's reflected in our numbers.
Do you think there's some kind of immunity that some of us may have built in?
There's no question there's a difference in immunity, because
whether it's genetic or whatever it is, something.
It's not only immunity, but how your immune system handles this challenge. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the guy next to you may have the virus in them, but they don't manifest it. Somebody else has the virus, they're having trouble breathing. They have shortness of breath. So you have these two extremes. scientists are looking now is that why is there a differential response to this, okay? Why is it that some people end up in an ICU? And I'm not just talking to senior citizens and ones with chronic disease.
But even younger people.
Younger people.
Right.
Why is there a difference in immune response? And we don't know the full answer of that yet, but the science is evolving.
We're learning more every day, though,
yes,
aren't we?
That's correct.
Ingrid called us at 790-2040. Ingrid, you're with Dr. Carmona.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Earlier, Dr. Carmona, you were talking about students persisting in going to bars. And the thought had occurred to me some time ago that there could be more alcoholism among college students than we ever thought. And that's why they are irresistibly drawn to this. They can't avoid the alcohol. They can't resist it. They have trouble staying away from it on campus because they're observed by others who don't approve of that sort of thing. And is this a revelation possibly of a situation that really needs to be addressed among young people? I know I'm an elder, and I see so much alcoholism among old people. It's very sad. We're very concerned about other drugs, and so am I, but alcoholism doesn't seem to be getting the kind of attention that it may need.
Thank you, Ingrid. Yeah. That is a good point about alcoholism, especially among elderly people. But Ingrid saying, what about younger folks?
Yeah. Well, alcoholism is a disease across the age spectrum, from young to old. And it's not any more pervasive on the campus than it is in the community. It is a problem. Social drinking is acceptable, but where do you draw the line? And that's sometimes the issue. So we have not seen on the campus, at least now, any particular problems. But we do know the students like to socialize. They go to their favorite bar or restaurant with their friends, and they have a beer. And, you know, all of that, if they are of age and socially responsible, is part of acceptable social practice in our society. When it becomes excessive, when somebody is drunk, not only a student but anybody, and can't control their behaviors, they become a nuisance to society, then that becomes problematic. So the challenge we're facing today, though, is that with bars, restaurants, gyms opening more, that there always is the potential to spread the disease more. So we don't know for sure it's going to happen. But again, if people are going to take advantage of a gym, take advantage of a bar, mask up, as the president says, President Robbins, mask up and bear down.
Mm-hmm.
Wash your hands, keep your social distance, have your relationships with your friends, but stay apart. The only people that you should have that close contact with are your people in your family that you live with on a regular basis.
All right, Dr. Carmona sticks around for a second segment, 790-2040, if you would like to join us. It's the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. We'll be right back with Dr. Carmona.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowlands 1 and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com.
The
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our newsmaker interview today, Dr. Carmona is here, a former United States Surgeon General who was leading the reentry effort at the University of Arizona. Before the break, Ingrid was talking about alcoholism and students. Well, certainly one area of concern will be the Greek system on the U of A campus. Are the leadership, are these young people stepping up?
Bill, I am really happy that you have brought that up because President Robbins and the deans have come together with Greek Life. I've had several meetings with them, as have the incident command staff. And we are just so pleased as how they have stepped up on campus themselves to be able to insist that within their houses, Greek Life, that they will follow the public health practices. They will pretty much take their own disciplinary action against anybody who departs from those good practices. So they're, in effect, helping us to keep the campus safe. But they did this independently. They came together, and I was just so happy to hear their leadership step up and say, hey, we're taking control of this. We want to be on the university. We want our houses to be safe. So we will hold our members accountable.
790-2040 for Dr. Carmona. If someone does decide they're not going to wear a mask, they're going to party, do they know when they first get on campus and are tested, do they know there will be repercussions?
Yes, you know, let me put it this way. We have tried to lead with a public health model of education, okay, to be able to encourage people, inspire them to change their behaviors so that we can all benefit from the safe and healthy campus. When there are departures, that there's nonconformity to public health practices, people are not practicing social distancing, not wearing a mask, there can be repercussions. Yes, professors have the ability to stop the class, to ask a student to leave if they're not going to conform, because it's not just their right, but their right of not wearing a mask then infringes on the health of everybody in that classroom. So these are very delicate issues. The president is aware, dean of students is aware, and we're working through this, and hopefully we can prevail through education and change those behaviors.
This vaccine, Moderna, I believe that is they're having a news conference actually later this afternoon to say that some initial results, Dr. Carmona, of the vaccine given to folks over 55, between 55 and 75, have looked very promising. That's good news. There will be two shots, according to what they're saying,
a booster,
among 20 within a month or so apart. But the initial response looks very good.
Yes. So in these studies, there's small groups of people that they look at. And then as you get to the next phase, basically you have to have a bigger group. You want to make sure it's diverse. You want to make sure it's young people and old people, that there are people of all ethnicities, because we recognize we're not all the same. Our metabolism is different. Our immune systems are different. But we have to get to a point where the FDA can look and say, okay, it is efficacious and it does no harm. So we'll move forward with it. So we're trying to accelerate this now much faster than it's ever been done before. But the danger in acceleration to market is that you can make mistakes. And then when we have a mistake, then it's not effective or it can harm people. So that's the delicate balance we're having now.
What is your concern? I know you do have concerns of nearly 40 years, Dr. Richard Carmona, in law enforcement. Now we have a new incident. This is fairly close to my hometown of north of Chicago, in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the shooting there of a gentleman. How concerned are you with these incidents?
Well, I'm very concerned for many reasons. First and foremost, let's not pass judgment on this one yet, because there hasn't been an investigation. But the fact that these incidents continue to fester uncertainty, the fact that people, rightfully so, feel that they must stand up for civil rights and it has to be done peacefully. But at a time when we're trying to emphasize social distance because of the spread of disease, we have thousands of people coming together to protest justifiably because they feel rights have been violated. But yet during that time, they inadvertently spread disease. So it's a terrible thing that's happening. But the timing is terrible as well, because now it's potentiating the spread of disease. So we hope as a nation we can come together around these things. We hope that we will be able to address each case individually, because unfortunately they all get lumped together, you know. And yet we have, on this particular case, the short video you see is very, very painful to watch. But we need to let the investigation take place to be able to ascertain clearly all of the facts in the case.
All right, let's take another call. Gene called us at 790-2040 with a pretty darn good question. Go ahead, Gene.
Oh, hi, Dr. Carmona. I was wondering if you knew the accuracy of the COVID test. I know no test is accurate 100%. There's always some false positives and false negatives. Mm-hmm. And if so, like, which would be the most accurate test to get?
Oh, great question. Thanks so much for the question. And it's a very complicated answer, though, so I'm going to try and synthesize it quickly. There's three basic tests. There's an antibody test. The antibody test basically tests if your body responded to being exposed to the virus. So if you have these antibodies, what they call IgA, IgM, IgG, and they are elevated, it doesn't say you have the disease, but it says your body was exposed to it, so you responded. Then there is the antigen test, which is a test directly of fragments of the virus. So it says you have the virus in you. And then you have a PCR test, which is a polymerase chain reaction test, the one that they dig deep into your nose with the swab to be able to get. The PCR is probably the most accurate, where it has the greatest what they call sensitivity and specificity, which that means it has less of a chance of giving you either a false negative or positive. The antigen test is pretty good as well, but there are some limitations as to when the test was done. Is it picking up viral fragments that are no longer infected? You know, this is more the geeky science. And then the antibody test itself, you've seen some of the challenges there, because the first tests to hit the market when this problem came out were not regulated. A lot of companies went to market and started selling tests. And probably the worst data we saw came out of the White House, where up to 48% of the tests were inaccurate at that point. So there's no single answer. As we look at sensitivity, specificity, and reliability of the test, you have to look at whose test is it? Has the test been validated by an external source? Was it approved by an EUA, an emergency use authorization, and or FDA? And then you could start to make guesses on that. So what I did was give you an idea of the three general tests that are out there now, but within those categories, there's hundreds of different tests.
What about the next generation of tests? A quick test. Are we close to that?
Closer, yeah. The saliva test now, you know, we started out with PCR that took a week or two to get
right.
The results.
Sure.
Now, the test that the University of Arizona developed, which is an antigen test, the students come in, get tested, and within an hour, they have their results.
Whoa.
So now we're looking, though, in that one is... We can even get better, and we have people working on a saliva test.
Right.
Where you just swabbed in the mouth.
Right.
And hopefully it'll get down to kind of like a pregnancy test.
Sure.
Where you touch it and you get an instant response.
Yeah.
So that's where the science is going now.
You could see a case where even people, there might even be a home test if approved
exactly.
and accurate. We could get to that point.
Yeah. Well, again, remember pregnancy tests is as an example.
Yeah.
Oh, as you went to your doctor, they drew the blood, they tell you a week later. Now you buy the kit at home, you test fluid, and you know right away. So moving in that direction is what we're looking at, Bill.
All right, Dr. Carmona, I'm going to have to wrap it up with you. But generally, are you, from our last visit a month or so ago, you're much more pleased with the way things are going. Is that correct?
It depends on what issue you're speaking about,
just
Bill.
Just generally of this.
Well,
are we making progress in this?
I think we're making progress. I am still extremely unhappy that the hyperpartisanship I see every day is as virulent as the virus, if not potentiating the virus. We need to come together as a nation, not as people in a party, but as Americans, just as if we were at war, where parties are not important, but we're fighting a war against an invisible threat, a coronavirus. And that coronavirus affects Republicans, Democrats, independents, doesn't make a difference. We need to have leadership that brings us together and not divides us.
All right, Dr. Richard Carmona, always a pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Carmona. I know you've got a very busy schedule. Let you get back at it. And stay safe, my friend, okay?
Thanks, Bill. Pleasure to be with you.
All right, the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition. We'll continue with our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice candidate interview series. Benny White will be joining us next. He's a candidate for Pima County Recorder. That's next on Buckmaster. In the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Very busy hour as usual on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The Buckmaster Show Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Property Management and Real Estate. Additional support comes from Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. What a beautiful 13-acre site. All the plants you need and some beautiful merchandise, much of it imported from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. That's part of Zocalo Village. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com are the websites. Boy, you know we've got a problem in Pima County with our air quality when the former Surgeon General of the United States, Richard Carmona, who was just with us in studio, says he's even having breathing issues today. Bottom line, folks, as Dr. Carmona advised, please, if you have any kind of issues, even if you don't have issues with breathing problems, just stay inside today with the air conditioning. Our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice series continues, our candidate interview series. We're now kicking it off as we get ready for the general election. First up is Benny White. Benny is a combat veteran, 45-year resident of Pima County with a BA from the UA, and he has a law degree, plus he's a former captain of Delta Airlines. Benny White joining us on the Buckmaster Show Live Line. Benny, how are you?
I'm doing just great, Bill, and thanks for having me on.
Benny White, running for Pima County Recorder, and of course, F.N. Rodriguez stepping down after nearly three decades running the Pima County Recorder's office. Benny, why did you decide to get into this? And generally, did you think F.N. did a pretty good job?
You know, I've had a really good working relationship with F.N. for, I think, about 25 years. The relationship's been both cordial and professional. You know, we have had our differences of opinion, but I think overall she's run a very good shop. She has a very professional staff down there. One of the things that people ask me about is, what will you do when you're elected? Are you going to get rid of everyone and bring new people in? And the answer is no. You know, my 21 years of military service taught me a lot of things, but one of the things is that you don't go into a new office and start breaking the china. That is a disaster waiting to happen. So I'll go in and go to work on day one, and we'll work and continue to serve the public.
Let's talk about the four issues that you see most important, kind of, if you will, the four legs of the stool. What is your platform, Benny White?
Well, first thing I want to do, Bill, is take a look at the voter registration files and see if we can clean those up. I'm in the process of, both during the time that I walked around in the precincts trying to get signatures on petitions and now running for the office, I walk the precincts on a daily basis just about. And I, in process of doing that, I print out the precinct voter list. And I find errors of somewhere between 15 and 20% of the records have some sort of an error in them. Either the person doesn't live there anymore, the name is wrong, there's not a house at the residence address, people have died and they're still on the rolls, people get ballots at those houses when there's nobody there by that name. And all of those things impact our elections, and I'd like to clean some of that up. There's a number of databases that are kept by the medical examiner, by the assessor, by Homeland Security, by the Social Security Administration. And all of those can be interfaced so that we get a clean record of who lives in the county and who is eligible to vote, and get some of those records cleaned up.
And so would that be a difficult process, Benny, to kind of really take a hard look at who is registered to vote?
It is, but it's technically possible right now to do it, and it's an ongoing. It's not a one-time you do it and you're done. Currently, right now, they use what's called a national change of address system that is a product of the Postal Service. And that's pretty good because a lot of people, when they move, will tell the Postal Service, I used to live over there, and now I live over here, and that gets input into that postal system. Then about four or five times a year, our recorder's office takes that system and updates our voter registration files. The problem with that is that that doesn't catch all the problems. If someone moves and doesn't tell the post office about it, that's not a part of that NCOA system. We also have problems with reporting deaths. From time to time, we get out of date on reporting deaths by as much as 2 years. And there needs to be an easier way for family members to come forward and report that death to the recorder so that we can take that deceased person off the rolls. It's really embarrassing when you go to somebody's house and knock on the door and say, I want to talk to your parents, and they're deceased sometimes for a couple of years. That causes anguish of the family. It embarrasses the candidate or whoever's knocking on the door. And I think that can be cleaned up and made easier for the family to report those situations.
What else would you like our listeners to know about you, Benny, and what you intend to do if elected as Pima County's next recorder?
Well, Bill, I am really well qualified for this position, and I've got a lot of experience. I've been working in election matters in Tucson elections and Pima County elections and actually all over the state for about the last 12 years. I know what the procedures are. I've worked with the Secretaries of State for 8 years writing the Elections Procedures Manual, which is about a 500-page document that election officers all over the state use to conduct elections. In addition to that, I've used my law degree to become very familiar with all of the election laws and now the recording laws in Title 33 so that I'll be ready to go on day one.
So you're going to hit the ground running. You're saying you really have the experience to do this job.
I do, Bill. I'm qualified, experienced, and I have knowledge of the law. And there are a significant number of federal and state laws that you simply have to comply with. And if you don't, you're going to get sued by the federal government or possibly the Attorney General or various citizens.
Do you worry, Benny, with one of these, what they call down-ballot elections, the recorder, that some people may feel that they're just going to vote by party rather than the individual? Is that a concern for you, Benny White?
Well, it certainly is. I listened to my opponent the other night. She told everybody, don't worry about the qualifications of the people. Just vote Democrat all the way down the ballot. That'd really be a problem. Mm-hmm. For me in this race and for the public, because my opponent is just really not qualified. And I've counted millions of ballots and been in the room when millions of ballots have been counted. And you do see, as you go further and further down the ballot, the votes start dropping out. People get inundated with information about the president, the U.S. senator, the congressman, the sheriff, some of the legislative districts, but by the time they get down to the county offices, they just don't know what that office does. One of the things I continually try to inform people about is, what does the recorder do? They record all the property records. They also have a significant task of keeping up with the voter registration. They do all the mail ballot processes. They verify the provisional ballots when they come in from elections. And they're involved in a lot of lawsuits that are brought forward, challenging petitions or nomination petitions or contests of elections and recounts, and all those kind of things are a part of what the recorder has to be able to respond to. So it is a very, very important race, and it is one of those races that people just assume that somebody's going to do the job. And in this case, FN has been doing that job for 28 years, so there's not been any competitive races for a very long time.
Right.
And people are not familiar with how important that particular race is.
All right. Where can people find out more about you, your website?
You bet. I keep it stocked full of information. It's bennyforrecorder.com. Just spell out the words, B-E-N-N-Y-F-O-R, recorder.com. There's a lot of information on my proposals, my solutions, what I see is the problems that we're facing, my background. I continually update it with videos and interviews like this one and events that we're having.
Okay. All right. And Benny, this interview will be up at KVOI.com, where we archive all of our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice series. And of course, all of my shows are available at BuckmasterShow.com. Benny White, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on, Bill.
Benny White, Republican candidate, Pima County Recorder. Up next, our faith and spirituality contributor, Father Robert Hendrickson of St. Philip's in the Hills. He'll be with us on the live line right after this.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Buckmaster presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It's time to start planning to visit Silver City. So when you're ready, well, the Land of Enchantment will once again be ready to welcome you as an out-of-state visitor. But right now, you can go to southwestnewmexico.org. Check it out for great places to stay and so many things to do. We've got autumn coming up. What a beautiful time of year in the high country as the aspens start to turn color, and hopefully things will be available for us over in the Land of Enchantment. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Downtown Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Speaking of the live line, let's check it out right now on the live line, Father Robert Hendrickson. Father Robert is the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. He is the Buckmaster Show contributor on faith and spirituality. Father Robert, how are you these days?
I am all right, other than learning how to be a first-grade teacher, in addition to my other work. I think things are okay. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, you know, hanging in there. We had the former Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Carmona, on the program at the beginning of the show in studio with me. And you know it's a bad situation with our air, Father Robert, when you have the former Surgeon General telling everybody, do not go outside today. The air quality is horrible.
Well, that he is someone we should all be listening to for sure.
Well, one thing I'd like to listen to your thoughts on how COVID has really forced us in many ways to confront the issue of death, how we think about dying, and what does it mean for how we live. Those of us in the United States and maybe the world struggle with the whole idea of thinking about death, don't we?
Well, we do, and we're a death avoidant culture. I mean, when you think of all the different ways that we are marketed to try and to try and encourage us to figure out how to stay young, whether that's to keep our heart young or our skin young or our hair looking young. Our entire culture is sort of obsessed with youth, and in that obsession, we sort of forget two things. One is that we forget that we are all going to die at some point or another, whether we like it or not. And the second thing is that we will all grow older, and with aging comes a whole range of gifts that we also, I think, sometimes pretend aren't there in a culture that sort of denies the effects of aging and also denies the gifts of that, too, and denies the gifts of looking toward our own mortality.
Well, we're very, very, many of us having to say goodbye to loved ones in a very difficult time with this social distancing funerals. By their very nature, funerals are really not about social distancing, Father Robert. They're about getting together and hugging friends and family. So it's kind of a disconnect there that's very difficult for people to handle.
I think it's hugely challenging. And to me, that's one of the hardest parts of ministry right now is that so much of ministry is being there to look someone in the eyes, to hold their hand, to hug them, to pray with them, all those sorts of things. And we're having to figure out what does it mean to not just to minister, but just to sort of be human with one another in this time. And as nice as it is to see people in Zoom or all this sort of, you know, all the sort of technological ways we have to do that now, there's no replacement for being in the presence of someone, especially in a moment of need, whether it's your need or their need. And boy, I know we are all missing that now.
How are you handling it at St. Philip's?
Well, we're doing everything we can sort of online. We have Bible studies online. We have worship twice a day online. We have online classes in the evenings and by, you know, other types of classes in formation groups during the day. We even do coffee hour online. So we're trying to do as much as we can online. And I think the thing that I have to remind myself, you know, the word we often use is virtual worship or virtual coffee hour. And I think what we have to remind ourselves is community, there's nothing virtual about it, right? In the same way that when we talk about relationships, they're not virtual, they're real. And so we have to figure out what are the tools we have right now in this difficult moment to make sure we maintain those real relationships however we can. And that's, I think, the crucial thing right now.
What is the PV world going to look like? PV being post-vaccine. What is that world going to look like, the religious world, Father Robert?
Well, what I'm finding now that is intriguing to me is a lot of folks are actually going deeper right now than they might have been able to or inclined to before all of this. And I think part of that has to do with people's, you know, their daily lives are cleared up of some of the clutter that was in them. They don't have a lot to do, so, you know, that always encourages people to go back to Scripture or to think about things that were important to them or that are important to them. And so we have people who are watching our online services every day who have told me, oh, I never came to those or paid attention to them. And they're talking about how much deeper their faith is feeling because of that attending online. And my hope is that in the PV, post-vaccine or world, that what we find is that people hold on to that desire to go deeper. And if we do that, I think it'll be a kind of almost a second great awakening for people, because I think that there's an opportunity here for us to be reminded of what's important to us, to be reminded, yes, of our mortality, and to be reminded of what it means to remain close to one another, especially in times like this where we're forced to be physically distant from one another.
And as human beings, we want to reach out and hug people, and we want to instinctively shake hands. And I'm just wondering, as we look forward to that PV world, what the difference is going to be and how we gather. And I wonder if there gradually some people will be very reluctant even to be with any kind of crowd. So I think we'll have a combination of a live worship service, still the streaming, but people then in the sanctuary itself. Is that kind of the way you think it might evolve?
Yeah, I think we'll have probably a hybrid mix, where initially we'll probably have services that are capped at a certain number of people who can attend, and then those will be streamed online and recorded so people can participate online. But we did a round of surveys not that long ago, and about two-thirds of people responded back that they either definitely would not or probably would not attend in-person worship anytime soon. So I think churches are going to have to maintain some sort of online presence so that folks who for whom it is a risk or who feel it's a risk can still participate. And then when you're actually in the church, you know, at least initially for the initial phases, we're going to have some sort of distancing, you know, the 6 feet, masking is going to be required, you know, all those sorts of common sense steps that we know are proven to decrease the spread of the disease when we are together. So for us at St. Philip's, I mean, we're guided by two things. One is the direction of our bishop. That's something we have no say in. And then the other is just good common sense science. So we're waiting for health professionals to advise us and tell us the best way to go forward. But, you know, fundamentally, you know, in a faith that is all about self-sacrifice, it's impossible for us to make these things 100% safe and 100% secure. And any religion or anything, really anything in our lives that promises it's 100% safe is probably selling a false bill of goods. So we're all of us in our daily lives make the choice to accept some risk. And I think going to church is going to be part of that sort of risk calculation that everyone does in their own life. What is going to dinner, going to the store, and going to church worth to me? What risk am I willing to take? And I think that's something that every believer is going to have to ask themselves as they think about how to go back to church and how they want to participate in the faith life of their community.
And where can people find out more and take part and watch these virtual services and interact?
But it's simple for us, stphillipstucson.org. And when you get on there, you'll see the recorded service from the past Sunday. And then there's a whole calendar of events on there that tell you what's coming up and how to register for various things and how to sign up. The simplest thing is to go onto the website and find out more. And, of course, you're always our contact information is on there for people to call or check in with us. And if people aren't comfortable technologically, we have folks who are willing to help them learn how to access the services, set up a Zoom account, help them set up their iPad or whatever it is so that they can connect. And so we want to make that as easy as possible, recognizing that not everybody has the same level of technological proficiency, but everyone has the same ability to learn it.
All right. Father Robert, always a pleasure. Father Robert Hendrickson of St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, where I am a proud member. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Bill. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Father Robert with us on the Buckmaster Show. Boy, it's been a very full hour, to say the least. Zipped right by. A lot of content in the program. But now it's time to say goodbye. Bill Buckmaster saying goodbye along with Tom Fairbanks. Have a great afternoon.